Hey friends, my name's Kevin and I'm one of the pastors at Friends Church Orange. We are so glad that you found us. Whether you are watching this message or listening to it in your car or on a run or wherever you may be, it's our hope that you would find hope and encouragement and joy in the person of Jesus today. If there's any way that we as a church can be a blessing to you, please let us know by connecting with us on our website. Here we go. Enjoy the message.
Good morning. It's great to be with you. I love this church. It's very fun to get to kick off this new series called Encounters. Each week in this series, we're going to be going over an encounter that Jesus had with someone in the weeks just prior to his death. And our hope in this series is not just that we would get more familiar with the story surrounding Easter, that's important, but that actually we would ourselves encounter Jesus. This series is an invitation to intimacy with Jesus, to really have an encounter with him. Have you ever played that game like if you could invite any five people in the whole world that you wanted to invite to dinner, who would those five people be? Anybody ever played that? Oh, good. Some of you had. The first service, they'd never played it. I'm like, where have you people been? Okay, so it's a totally fun game. We play it in my family, and these are my five people. They change often, some of them. A couple of them are always the same. One is Tim Keller. Tim Keller was the modern-day C.S. Lewis of our time, and I feel like even though I never met him, he discipled me. My love for Jesus and my understanding of the Word grew so much under his teaching. So Tim Keller's definitely on my table. Second one, J.K. Rowling, because she wrote Harry Potter. Do I have to say more? Okay, so I will. She has so many spiritual underpinnings in her stories, and yet she is not a Christian. So I just would love to have a conversation with her. Third would be Billy Graham, because my dad became a Christian at a Billy Graham crusade, and it changed the trajectory of our family forever. Fourth would be Anne Frank, because her story is so compelling, and I would find it a privilege to be witness to her pain, and I think we should never forget. And then five would be Tom Selleck, because he's Tom Selleck. For those of you under 30, that would be like Zac Efron, Ryan Reynolds. Okay, now they're tracking. Okay, good, we're all together. So could you imagine the conversation at that table? It'd be fascinating, wouldn't it? Well, the encounter with Jesus that we're going to look at today takes place at a dinner table. It's really a dinner party that is being held for Jesus and one of his friends. And I want to set up the scene for you a little bit. So just prior to this dinner party, a few weeks earlier, Jesus had gone into a town called Bethany, and he raised Lazarus from the dead. Remember that story? So Lazarus died. He was dead for 4 days. Jesus comes, raises him from the dead, which makes Lazarus a pretty famous individual now in this whole region. But also what happened is Jesus was even more famous. He could not go anywhere without mobs of people trying to get to him. And so he and the disciples went to a little town called Ephraim on the other side to just be able to continue to minister and not be in these throngs. The other result was that the religious leaders, they were really super mad at Jesus. They were always mad at Jesus. But they're really super mad at him now because he raised someone from the dead and mobs of people are following him. And so they put a hit out on Jesus, essentially. If you think the Bible is boring, you're just not reading it. Because really, they put a hit out on Jesus. They said, if you hear of him, if you know where he is, if you see him, you have to come tell us. And their plan was they were going to kill him. Now, ironically, Jesus was already going to willingly give himself up to save the world, to offer us salvation. So they didn't have to go to all that trouble, but that's what they were going to do. And so that's the backdrop of our story. And when we jump into it, it's just a few days before Passover. So Jews from all over Israel are coming into Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. And Jesus takes the risk. And even though it's dangerous, he heads back into Bethany, where he raised Lazarus from the dead. And that's where we'll pick it up. Our story takes place in John chapter 12, Matthew 26, and Mark 14. And we're going to take pieces of each of them. So let's read. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus, therefore, came to the house of Simon the leper in Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave him a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of the ones reclining with him at the table. In Matthew 26, it says all of the disciples were there as well. So at this dinner, we have Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, Jesus, the disciples, and Simon, a former leper. I just wonder how you feel about that if you're Simon. Like, what if your name was like Greg, the guy who had COVID? Like, who wants to be known that way? But that's how they reference him, Simon, a former leper. And then there are some unnamed others. And the primary point of this passage is going to be about what Mary does. And we're going to spend the bulk of our time looking at that. But I think it's really important that we look at who's at the dinner party. Because it tells us something about Jesus. And it tells us something about us. So if you look at this cast of characters, right, you have Lazarus. We've talked about him. He was raised from the dead. But his life now puts Jesus' life in jeopardy. Then you have Mary and Martha. They're sisters who fight. We see them fight in the book of John. There are also two single women living in a society that if you're not married, you really don't have very much importance. And you have no influence in the social strata. And then we have Peter. You all remember Peter? Peter's that passionate dude who's a leader with a lot of rough edges, who at one moment is saying, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." And in the next moment is doing something stupid and impetuous that Jesus has to say, "Peter, get behind me." Right? That's Peter. And then we have Matthew, who was a traitor to his countrymen and stole from the Jewish people and worked with the Romans. And then we have another Simon, who is a zealot, who would have killed Matthew if they weren't both disciples of Jesus, because he killed people who worked with the Romans, and he was an assassin to kill Romans. And then we have Judas, whose heart was always guarded and who was always drawn toward power. This is the cast of characters at the dinner party. And when I look at them, I find a lot of the characteristics I see in them in myself, right? I've been given new life and purpose. But like Peter, I'm still temperamental and faithless sometimes. I know that Jesus accepts me. But maybe like Matthew, I still feel the need for other people's approval. Like John, man, I'm in. I want to serve Jesus with my whole heart. But my ego, it keeps hanging around. Right here. I'm like Mary. I have a tender heart. But I can armor up with the best of you. I wonder where you see yourself in this cast of characters. I wonder if there's something in your life that you think excludes you from sitting at the table. Because what we learn from this cast of characters and what we learn about Jesus is he invites everyone to the table. You are invited to sit at the table with Jesus. No matter what your past is, no matter what your present is, Jesus invites you to sit at the table with him. And I hope you'll say yes. I hope even today you'll come. You'll come on this journey with me so we can encounter Jesus together. Because crazy and beautiful things happen when you get close to Jesus. See, when you sit at the table, metaphorically, when you hang out with Jesus, when you spend time with Jesus, when Jesus is who you do life with, you're going to see his heart. And his heart inevitably will invite your heart to grow deeper, to grow wider, to grow softer, to grow wiser. But this kind of growth requires vulnerability. And we don't like vulnerability very much. It scares us. There's a verse in the book of Hebrews that says, "Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart." So today, my friends, as we take this journey together, if you feel the Holy Spirit tapping you on the shoulder, you feel Jesus stirring something in your heart, you feel convicted, you feel encouraged, you feel challenged, you feel moved, I hope you will not harden your heart. Because one character in our story did, while another opened her heart more fully. Let's watch what happens. We're going to pick up the story in verse 3. "Mary, therefore, took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard, broke the flask, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume." Let me paint the picture for you here. They're at Simon the leper's house. But Martha has prepared and served the meal, and Martha is now back in the kitchen where women belonged according to those days. All the guys, all these dudes that we just named, they're all sitting around a table, right? They kind of lay, they don't sit on chairs, they kind of lay on pillows, head to head, feet to feet, and they're eating and they're talking, and I just think, what must the conversation have been like? Because this is the first time the disciples will have seen Lazarus since he came out of the grave wrapped in grave clothes, right? So can't you just imagine they're going like, dude, you were dead. Like, what was that like? Did you know you were dead? Did you see anybody when you were dead? When Jesus yelled your name, did you hear it? Or did you just wake up like, Lazarus, tell us what it was like for you, right? So this conversation is going on. Someone else might be talking to Simon going, Simon, don't you get sick of people calling you Simon the leper? No, don't you want to be done with that already? And as the conversation ensues, in walks Mary. You remember Mary. Mary's the one who, when Jesus is at her house teaching a group of men, she walks in the room straight up to the feet of Jesus and plops herself down so that she can sit at the feet of Jesus to listen and learn. This is Mary who John, the gospel writer, says Jesus loved, because she was known to be one of Jesus' best friends. This is Mary who, when her brother Lazarus died, falls again at the feet of Jesus, this time crying and wailing and saying, where were you? And now Mary is at Jesus' feet again. Because as she walks in this room, she goes directly toward Jesus, finds her place at his feet, breaks open a jar of perfume, because this was a costly, expensive gift. This wasn't something you used on the daily to smell better. This was for special occasions. And she breaks it open, and she pours it out on Jesus' feet. And then she takes down her hair and begins wiping Jesus' feet with her hair. And everybody stopped eating. And everybody stopped talking. And everybody is staring at Mary and Jesus. Because this time, Mary didn't come weeping and crying. Mary didn't come learning and listening. Mary came to worship. And she did so by making herself vulnerable. And then one of the disciples speaks up. Woman, what do you think you're doing? His name is Judas. Let's pick it up in verse 4. Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, the one who was about to betray him, said, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put in. Okay, what's happening right now? Mary's pouring her heart out in worship to Jesus. She hasn't seen him much since he raised her brother from the dead, and she hears all the rumors of that the chief priests and the Pharisees are out to get him, and so she just grabs her moment. And she's pouring her heart out, worshiping him, but she's making everybody incredibly uncomfortable. Why? Well, Mary broke several rules doing this from her society. First off, like I said, Mary wasn't supposed to be in the room with the men. She was supposed to be in the kitchen. The only time she was allowed to be in the room was if she was serving the food. But here she is at the feet of Jesus. Secondly, touching another person's feet was considered very degrading. That's why it was work for the slaves and the servants. But here she is rubbing oil into Jesus' feet, not even just with her hands, but with her hair. Third, a woman was never, ever supposed to take their hair down in public. Their hair was considered to be their crown of glory, and yet here Mary is wiping Jesus' feet with her crown of glory, leaving herself with absolutely no public dignity left whatsoever. And lastly, this flask was very expensive perfume. It was worth a year's wages, and it was likely meant to be part of her dowry, part of what she would give to a groom when he invites her to be his wife. So this really reduced her chances of a favorable marriage. And it's made everybody incredibly uncomfortable. Because in short, Mary's worship of Jesus was costly, vulnerable, and open-hearted. It begs the question, doesn't it? What is my worship like? How would my worship be described? Judas speaks up first and says, this is such a waste. Why wasn't this sold and the money given to the poor? Now, on some level, that seems like a fair question, doesn't it? I mean, it's worth a year's worth of wages. But John tells us that Judas actually didn't care for the poor. He was reacting to something in his own heart. Mary was just the trigger. It's a clue for us, you know. When we have a big reaction to something, the first place we should look is our own hearts. Because what was happening in Judas' heart was he knew he'd been stealing from Jesus and the disciples. What was happening in Judas' heart, I think Judas struggled with a scarcity mentality, always wondering if there was going to be enough for him. And so he always had to make sure that there was enough for his provision, his place, and his position in life. Do any of you relate to that? Any of you ever feel that? As a therapist, I've worked with a lot of people who, out of their wounds in their past, feel like they have to hustle and scramble to grasp position, to prove their value, that they matter. Right? To make sure that they have what they need, not rely on anybody else. And that grasping and that hustling, it is exhausting, and it lands them in my office because it didn't work anyway. And the only ones I've seen, honestly, that really get freed from that are the ones who find their security in Jesus, are the ones who trust Jesus with their needs and let him soften their hearts. But that was not Judas. Judas stayed stuck in this cycle, and it was hardening his heart. So much so that this incident is the one that tips the scales for him. It was right after this that Judas sells Jesus out. He goes to the chief priests and the Pharisees and sells Jesus out for 30 pieces of silver. Now, Judas wasn't the only one who was made uncomfortable by Mary's vulnerability. The other disciples, it says, were indignant, and they scolded her. But that word scolding means like they gave her a beating with their words. They were just lashing out at her. I mean, Mary really stepped in something, didn't she? She got these people all riled up. Why? Because our natural tendency is not toward vulnerability. Our natural tendency is to be in control, manage our image, keep our armor on, our hearts protected, so that we're never caught off guard. And sometimes, like Judas, we even resort to shaming and blaming others just so we don't have to feel vulnerable or look inside ourselves. More often, though, I think our armoring up is a little less dramatic than giving someone a lashing with our words. I think it looks more like I physically show up, but my heart's 100 miles away. I think that's how some of us come to church. Our butts are in the seats, but our hearts are far away. Vulnerability feels messy, feels uncontained, it feels exposed. But like it or not, my friends, vulnerability is the path to intimacy. And encountering Jesus is all about intimacy. When we lean into vulnerability with Jesus, do you know what we find? We find mess, we find brokenness, and we also find freedom. That's what Mary did. Mary leaned into vulnerability, and she found the freedom to love and be loved. Mary lived loved. She lived loved. Do you want to live loved? I do. I so want to live loved. But darn it, if I'm not good at armoring up. And sometimes it's so fast, it's so automatic. You know, my husband and I get in a fight like couples do. I know you get in fights too. Don't look at me like that. We all fight, right? And I do the next right thing, but My heart's in Egypt, 100 million miles away, because I've armored up. If we want to be people who encounter Jesus, if we want to be people who live loved, then we're going to have to be people who take off our armor and choose vulnerability. Let's go back to the story. So Mary's made herself completely vulnerable, worshiping Jesus, and she received a lashing from more than just one person. But what does Jesus do? What does Jesus say? What does Jesus think? Well, in Mark 14, Jesus says, "Leave her alone. Knock it off. Step back. That's enough. Leave her alone. She has done a beautiful thing for me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial." What did Jesus think of Mary's vulnerability? Even though there were broken pieces all over the floor, there's oil everywhere, what did he think? He thought it was beautiful. He received it as a beautiful gift. He said her vulnerability is beautiful to him because she did what she could. Listen, my friends, Jesus is not asking you to be vulnerable in the way that your neighbor might be vulnerable. He's not asking you to do something that you cannot do. He's saying, do what you can, and do it in vulnerability, in honesty. That will be considered an act of worship. So being vulnerable with Jesus is going to be messy. And sometimes it will require that things are broken. Mary had to break the flask, right? And sometimes things in us have to break. But consider this. What if your brokenness, offered to Jesus in vulnerability, is received as a beautiful gift? And from there, he turns it into something that changes the world. Can you imagine that your brokenness, your vulnerability, might be the very thing that creates enough space in your life for you to encounter Jesus and bring Jesus to others that they might encounter him too? Look at 2 Corinthians with me. "But thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph in Christ and manifests through us the sweet aroma of the knowledge of him in every place. For we are a fragrance of Christ to God among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing." How do you smell today, my friends? What if your brokenness would become the aroma of Jesus? Paul says it a different way. He says, "In my weakness, he is strong. In my weakness, he shows himself to be my strength." Now, I want you to know, for me, like, these are not just lofty spiritual words. Like, this is where I'm living right now, live and in color, right in front of you. It has been a really painful 2 weeks. We've had death in my family. We're filled with sorrow. I have this weird ailment that makes me dizzy. That's why I'm sitting on a stool, because if I stand up, I might fall over, and that might, you know, make you all uncomfortable. And so when all this was going on, I was like, I can't preach. And I felt like God said, "Yeah, that's exactly where I want you. Because live and in color, you'll be in my weakness. He is strong." And live and in color, Heidi, your brokenness might be the very thing that reaches to someone. Jesus invites you to the table. And if you want to encounter Jesus, it's going to take brokenness, weakness, vulnerability. But the really amazing thing that spoke to me was she did what she could. You see, when I choose to be vulnerable and do what I can, we learn another really beautiful lesson from this story. And that is that nothing is wasted. Not one thing that you offer to Jesus in vulnerability will be wasted. There's nothing in any of the scriptures to indicate that Mary knew any more than anyone else that Jesus was, that she was preparing Jesus for burial. That's not what was in her heart or mind. She just had to worship Jesus while she had him in her presence. But her act of love, Jesus said, is so much more than she knew or that the disciples knew. Did you know that when you bring your vulnerable self to Jesus, he will do more with it than you could ever imagine? She brought what she had, and Jesus did so much more with it, to the extent that Jesus says, whenever this story is told, she will be remembered. Not because we're going to exalt a person, but because Mary lived, loved, and from there became a fragrance of Christ that drew others in. Do you remember the story of Jesus feeding the thousands with just a couple of loaves of bread and some fish? Yeah. In one of those stories, in John 6, after everybody has eaten, it says they were satisfied, they were filled, and all the people left. And do you know what Jesus says to his disciples? Look at this verse in chapter 6, verse 12. Gather up all the leftover fragments. Let nothing be wasted. The loaves had to be broken. The fish had to be torn in order to feed all those people. But Jesus sees all those broken pieces and says, we will let none of that be wasted. That's a metaphor for our lives. When you are broken and spilled out in the worship of Jesus, he will pick up every single piece and nothing will be wasted. Maybe that looks like forgiving someone who doesn't deserve it and will not even care. Maybe it looks like praising God when your heart is broken. Maybe it looks like choosing faith when everything is screaming at you to stop believing. Maybe it looks like sacrificing when it hurts. Whatever your vulnerability is, you can be assured that none of it will be wasted. When my youngest daughter was a senior in high school, she was a basketball player, and we were going to a tournament in Arizona, and I was the team mom. I was responsible for washing all the jerseys, and as I was a single mom, I just had a room to myself. It was a tournament at the end of December, and so everyone had gone off to do their own things as couples. I went back to the room to, you know, wash the clothes, and as I usually do at the end of the year, I sat with my journal, and I just said to the Lord, I feel like something new is coming. I feel like some hope is rising up in me. And if that's true, Lord, help me to lean into it. But you know what? Lord, would you let nothing from the season of grief and trauma be wasted? Would you just let nothing be wasted? And I had worship music on in the background, and at that moment, a song I had never heard before came on, the chorus of which goes like this. And nothing is wasted. He works all things for good. Nothing is wasted. Your promise remains forever the same. Nothing is wasted. And that's a promise for you too. The last thing I want us to talk about is what John really wants us to see, where he's juxtaposing this idea of caring for the poor and doing this act of worship for Jesus. The point of that was to help us understand that Jesus is worth it. The worth of Jesus Christ. He's the one who loved you when you were unlovable. He's the one who stays the same yesterday, today, and forever when you're unpredictable and moody. He's with you no matter what. And he will never, no, never leave you or forsake you. And he has new mercies for you every morning. Did you know that God has a mercy for every single need you have? Bring a need and you will find a mercy. Is your heart dead? His mercy gives new life. Is your heart hard? His mercy softens things. Is your heart broken? His mercy heals. He has mercy for every single need that you have. And the scripture tells us that he doesn't give his love and mercy in a stingy, withholding way, but it flows freely in an unending manner to us. This Jesus, he is the one who satisfied the payment that justice required so that mercy could flow into our lives. He's the one that when you suffer, he stands with you and co-suffers with you. And he's the one who has invited you to the table. The King of the universe has invited you to sit at his table to know him. And when that takes vulnerability, he promises to hold you and gather up all the pieces and turn it into something beautiful. So what's our response supposed to be to this today? Well, I want to close with a story about, again, my youngest daughter. She was 4 at the time, and she had a condition that doctors couldn't quite figure out, so we had to take her to Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, and she had to go under anesthesia for this particular procedure. And I'm waiting in the recovery room, and they wheel her in, and they put her behind a curtain, and I just go to go behind the curtain when the nurse is like, stop. You can't go in there. I have to wake her up out of the anesthesia. And I was like, you ever heard of a mother bear and a cub, lady? This is not such a good idea. So she goes in and she says, I'm standing on the other side of the curtain so I can hear. She leans down and says, Jessica, would you like some ice chips? No. Jessica, would you like a popsicle? No. Jessica, would you like some Sprite? No, I just want my mommy. I was like, get out of the way, lady. Here I come. That's really the heart of Mary. I just want Jesus. Just give me Jesus. And that's the heart I want to have going into this Easter season. Above all else, just give me Jesus. And if I, as a broken, fallible, wounded mom rushes in, getting everything out of the way to go get in my baby girl's face to say, I'm here, honey. You're okay. What is a good and loving, all-powerful, faithful, self-sacrificing Savior going to do if you say, just give me Jesus? Nothing, nothing, nothing will keep him from you. So we're going to enter a time of worship together now. And I've asked Angel just to sing over us. And while he's singing over us, I really want to encourage you to just go to your heart and take an accounting of what's there. Are you struggling with hard-heartedness? Are you terrified of vulnerability? Is your butt in the seat and your heart is somewhere else? Or maybe you can feel that Jesus has stirred this deep longing in you for more of him. Whatever is in your heart as Angel sings, just reckon with that. And ask God to help you to long for just give me Jesus. All right?